Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss The Bad Batch Season 3, currently airing on Disney+. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by the rest of my Star Wars pals. Kat Benish is here. Hi, Kat.
Hi, all. Did you know that moonlighting is only the number 14 on the list from Rotten Tomatoes of top shows from the 80s? It is surrounded on either side by Elf and 21 Jump Street, which I have actually seen both of and really enjoyed. In this essay...
Elf. I thought you said Elf.
I also heard Elf.
That's not
like I'm not familiar with this.
And we're still working on that Kiwi accent. We're still failing.
One of these days, Tony Sindelar is also here. Hi, Tony.
Hello, nerds. Hello, moonlighters, which I think is what we call our fans.
And Trevor.
That's no moonlighter.
Hi, Trevor.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, we'll have more mail to address at the end of the show, good and bad. But we are here now to talk about two episodes. That's right. We get two episodes this week.
Yeah.
The appropriately named...
I only watched the first one.
Yep. The episode six and seven of season three, the appropriately named Infiltration and Extraction. These episodes, I agree, Kat and I were discussing afterwards. We watched them. Not what I expected these episodes to be about.
Yeah.
With a title like that, I was expecting, you know, the classic Bad Batch goes in, they rescue, rather than them being the prey this time
around.
Yeah,
these were kind of like your Star Trek TNG episode names where it's like, just find a noun. That's something for the intern to do after we've made the episode. All right, so you want me to do the recap? Infiltration starts with it looks like some kind of covert clone mission, and you think it's going to be the Bad Batch because you're watching the show called The Bad Batch, but no, it's other clones. Rex is with a bunch of other clones. Probably some of whom we've seen before, some of whom we haven't, and the people who make the Clone Wars and Bad Batch assume that you recognize all clones and instantly and immediately
so
and remember their service records. But it's not the Bad Batch at all. It's on, I don't know if the planet is named, but we are somewhere else. And basically Rex and his they don't have a name yet. They're the kind of proto-rebellion clones are doing kind of, I guess, escort mission security services for a meeting of two senators. And these are characters we have seen from the Clone Wars. And significantly, they are senators who were on basically opposite sides of the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
But now in the post Clone Wars situation, are not happy with the status quo and the Emperor and the fact that things are not working out great, which is like a great little peek into what is the status of the world and the Bad Batch, and it's like, here, let us give you 5 minutes of a meeting.
We're so glad you asked, Tony.
Senators.
Let us tell you.
Yeah. You love meetings. Unfortunately, their meeting is attacked. There is a spooky kind of robot-esque Darth Vader-y kind of assassin. I guess, but they are very interested in chasing the assassin down. I was kind of surprised. I was like, let that guy go. Worry about getting your senators out of here. But no, they have to chase the assassin like through the sewers and through the rooftops.
I assume they were dividing and conquering. There's some other
people
taking care
of that. And they capture the assassin. And they are back at their clone base and they are interrogating the assassin, and they discover that he's got basically kind of like a bounty puck kind of deal with a picture of Omega on it. And Rex is like, time to call the Bad Batch and have them come for an in-person meeting where I will tell them very important
title
information that I could have put in an email. The Bad Batch all arrive. Echo drops them off and then has to leave the episode for reasons.
Gotta get Gregor.
Yeah. Mainly so that, because we can't all be on this planet.
We've got to make sure that Gregor and Wolf make significant eye contact at the end of the episode.
Yeah. Also, but before he does, he gives a gun to a small child.
Sorry.
A legally distinct bowcaster.
It's a cute gun for a child. It's not a gun. That would be barbarous.
Yeah. I do enjoy.
Barbarian.
I do enjoy, by the way, that her crossbow glows green when it's turned on, just making you a very easy target.
That's okay. I mean, the stealth ninja assassin who basically has no name has a glowing green thing on the side of his head.
Also, the coolest set of home automations in his little gauntlet thing where he can turn his chair around and close the door to his ship, and it does literally everything until he gets shot at one point.
Well, I think he's like the time you had to spend programming that, and then during a single update, he has to reprogram all of it again just to see what we have to go through with our home pod. I'm like, God, that's got to be annoying.
I would have really enjoyed a scene where he's standing standing outside the ship, like, close the bay doors, and it just doesn't do anything, like, two or three times, and then, oh, did you mean close the bagel? no, close the bay doors.
We get some nice stuff here with, you know, so the Bad Batch is back together with their kind of, like, you know, they call them brothers, but, you know, they're kind of the cousins, the second, the extended family of clones. But, like, there's complicated interpersonal relationships here where, like, Rex is good buddies with them, but Rex has with him Hauser, I believe, Hauser? Mm-hmm. Is that, am I saying it right?
Who's been Doogie, if you please.
No. Mm. Hauser, who we saw in previous Bad Batch episodes, like, a long time ago, in kind of ways that were like, why are they doing episodes that feature this guy? Mm-hmm. And I guess the answer is because he's going to come back. And Hauser was particularly back then, he was on the other side of the equation with Crosshair. And Hauser is not happy to see Crosshair. And so it's kind of this thing where, like, you know, Crosshair is more or less in good with the Bad Batch, but there are still other people out there who don't like him. They go to their kind of monastery hangout.
We forgot a really key scene here, Tony, is the... At the same time of all this, I think Omega's doing a lot of really important education and learning how to properly chew on a, what we call that? Toothpick.
Oh, yes. Oh,
yeah. Some really good mimicry between the two of them.
Yep.
Her and Crosshair.
Rex's group seems to be, I'm assuming based on visuals, that it's like an old monastery. It looks like the same.
I swear to God, I thought we were with the huts on Tatooine when they first landed.
But Kath, that's not, Jabba the Hutt did not build that palace. He kicked a bunch of monks out of that palace.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Depending on your canon, Tony.
Whoa. I think you've just turned
the
legends.
That may not be canon anymore. Yeah. Hold on. Let me tell you, just brief aside about the Bomar monks. Dan, stop me. Please, somebody stop me.
Why would they not include it in Boba Fett? This actually sounds really interesting.
Do you want to talk about the spider guys or no?
The Bomar monks are an order of monks in the Star Wars universe who, in order to reach, I guess, spiritual enlightenment, place themselves as, like, brains inside spider robots. How is no one stop me? As spider robots, and they live in these monasteries. But it turns out when you're a spider brain and a spider robot that just skitters around, a hot crime boss could just come in and be like, this is my house now.
Are you still a monk when you're in the spider body? Do you ever go back to your previous body?
No, I mean, I think it's a one-way ticket.
Wait, why?
Why
would this exist? The idea, who came up with this?
Ralph McQuarrie.
Well, that's a different question.
Yeah.
Like, Ralph in McQuarrie universe? The answer.
Well, no. I'm just trying to envision the order. Like, that's the same reason of, like, oh, man, it's pretty incredible the idea that we realized we could, like, do X. Like, you know what we need to do of, like, I wonder if they also did the whole lizard thing.
Your physical form
is
really dragging you down, right? With all of its, you know,
need
for sustenance and sleep.
The monks have one too many lizards up the nose. Like, that's clearly the only thing that could have happened.
Well, what if they had, wouldn't you be free from nose lizards if you had no nose?
Okay.
No nose, no lizards.
Tony, are you ready for some fun canon information? Bomar monks
canon information
canon.
About the
no.
Okay. Yes, not
there's
only.
One shot
not
of
only.
One in Book of Boba Fett. There's a horrible CGI one that skitters
what?
Across the.
Yeah, I don't remember this.
Not only.
Well, because it's like 1 second.
Why didn't we
it's
talk
not,
about it in that show?
Well, we were really distracted by how bad it was. Is the answer?
Okay, so
this
Dan, this
everything.
Is relevant.
Dan,
to
drop some knowledge. Dan,
please,
say something
tell
helpful
us,
because
tell
I've been
more,
talking
dear.
4 minutes.
The Bomar monks. They built their monasteries in a variety of places in the galaxy, including on the planet Teth.
That's where we are in this episode.
Which
is
where
Teth.
We are, which is also an episode or a location in the Clone Wars animated movie.
Yeah.
In which I think this is also occupied by a hut or has some hut-related things happening.
So or are they just hanging out there? They have the kidnapped.
So
anyways,
I guess
my point
the
being,
similarity in the architecture
correct.
Is not a mistake. But in fact, yet this sort of tangent about monks is actually incredibly relevant to the topic at hand.
So. Well, let's not get carried away. It's things we said. Relevant?
There is a surprising amount of, I think, in a lot of comics, like canon comics. There
I,
is
have,
a surprising
I think
amount
I had a Bomar monk action
stuff.
Figure or at
Do
least
they go,
figurine.
Why? What is the, like, what is the purpose of the monks? Like, what is their...
Well, that what is the
system?
Purpose of religion? Well, I think they want to be like enlightenment by not being in your physical body anymore.
They believe
well,
in isolating themselves from all physical sensation
the
to enhance the power of their minds.
Yeah. Well,
but they're okay, but they lost to a hut.
Well, they're
well,
not
I
like,
mean that
they're not like fighting people.
They're, yeah, but they don't care. They're
pursuing
on a higher
intellectual.
Level.
pursuits.
Or we don't know. Maybe they're stuck in like cleaning his.
Maybe
his,
they just think about being spiders. Kitchen. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, we're what? How far did we get into this episode, Tony?
I have questions.
Technically, we are in the establishing shot of Teth. Anyway, they're on Teth. They're having a meeting. They're interrogating a guy. Crosshair is real worried because apparently Crosshair knows a lot about this clone assassin stuff. Which,
well, he was indoctrinated into this. We actually did learn about this earlier.
I forgot. There's an episode where Crosshair is going in and they're trying to. I forget what actually the entire purpose of the episode. Just remember that Crosshair only kills someone at the very end.
Yeah.
And like saddens. You get very sad. Yeah,
it was the solitary clone, which is when he worked with Cody on a former separatist planet.
That's right.
And they're trying to rescue the governor who's been held hostage. And eventually at the end, Crosshair is told to kill the governor.
And he does it.
And he does it. And that's kind of part of his like sort of
the low
indoctrination.
The low.
Yeah. So, and I think he does kind of have this armor at one point too, or something very similar to it when he's on. So he does know a bit about them.
Yeah, Crosshair is super creepy at them, saying, like, we need to leave. As soon as he sees the guy, he's like, we got to leave now.
Yeah, we're not safe. And spoiler, they're not safe. There is a second clone assassin who has been sent to kill the first clone assassin and capture Omega. And he's, like, sneaking around the base at first. And then there's basically kind of a firefight. And there's a thermal detonator that gets flamethrowered accidentally. And, like, everything blows up. And things are bad. Unfortunately, presumably, a lot of the clones we met earlier in the episode who are friends of Rex are dead now. But the clones that you really care about, they're not dead. And then an Imperial retrieval team shows up. A lot of questions about org structure here.
Also with Crosshair and the fact that, again, clones and structure were mixed. It is interesting, though, it seems like Wolf gets a lot more respect than Crosshair did when he was leading his stormtroopers.
So a ship shows up and it is led by Wolf, who I don't remember if we have seen Wolf before
not
this timeline.
Not in Bad Batch.
So we have seen Wolf in the future.
And in Rebels.
And in the past. And in Clone Wars.
And in the past. Wolf is one of Rex's roommates. Wolf, Gregor, and Rex are like living on that.
They're the
AT something out
as
in the
Rebels,
of the desert.
The only clones that we know are still alive.
Yeah. So they're not roommates yet. He's still working for the Imperials, and he's got there's like weird mix of stuff here where Wolf, who seems to be like clone commando, he's got stormtroopers with him who are TK troopers, so they're just recruits. He's got one clone commando with the backlit
the glowy
blue neon
visor.
And then they've got this assassin who later Wolf will be like, who do you work for? How does this work? How come you're not following my orders? But the episode basically ends with the explosion and Wolf showing up with plans to capture Omega. That was Infiltration.
Excellent.
It's good.
Excellent. This would be a dramatic place for an episode to end if you had to then wait a week, but you don't, because Extraction is next. I guess the Infiltration was the assassin sneaking into the base.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we have, by the way, seen those assassins before, which Rex mentions. There's an episode, I don't remember if it was last season or season before, where they're also hanging out with Senator Chuchi and somebody tries to kill her.
Yes.
And
she has had a lot of assassinations.
When you're fomenting a rebellion, know, you're going to get on the
really
Empire's bad side.
About how, like, we never hear or see Mon Mothma, but we always see this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think they know that those like shadowy assassins exist, as they mentioned, like that they're clones, but they're, like they're not right. We learned from Crosshair that essentially that they've been even further like mind wiped, essentially.
They don't seem to have personalities. I got a lot of Winter Soldier vibes.
Yeah,
in terms
menacing
of, you know,
is their personality.
They do talk, though. I was worried for a while they'd been sort of like robbed of all their speech, but he finally speaks when Crosshair walks into the interrogation room. Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the first episode moves somewhat at a kind of standard pace. We've got meetings, we have people telling stuff, there's sharing of information, which is nice. The second episode is a little bit more of just we are on the run, we're gutting our way through stuff. So good news, the characters that you remember the names of did not get killed in the explosion and are basically making
Except
their way
maybe
through
maybe Fireball?
Of, yeah.
Oh, the name like
making
that.
Their, yeah, making their way through the basement of the monastery, because there's a you know, I don't know. There's a door at the bottom of the like pillar that the, of stone that they're built on. So they got to work their way down. Wolf is there giving orders, but the clone assassin doesn't care about the orders and basically kind of gets like locked in the basement with the Bad Batch and friends.
There was a great line there somewhere of like the operative has gone rogue, but they've already called these guys also sort of the rogue clones or the rogue operatives of like, everyone's rogue, right?
Everyone's rogue,
except for Wolf.
Yeah. I like there's some neat stuff with the kind of monastery architecture where there's like a big spiral staircase that goes all around it, but there's also a huge open
central shaft. Kind of,
yeah, that's cool. And you know, cool. And the assassin is like shooting from one place, and then he gets basically launched by an explosion from Crosshair, and then is down further.
Crosshair continues to have hand problems.
Yeah,
and I like that he decides
relies
at one
on
point,
heaven weaponry.
Let's just explode.
They get in a little ship and you think maybe they'll be okay, but no, their little ship gets shot down. This show loves wrecks that everybody walks away from
much
as it loves
phenomenal.
Big monsters
phenomenal. Yeah. Safety record, like Boeing should be taking notes.
Too soon. So now they're running and gunning, I guess, through the, it's kind of a jungle. They're at basically the assassin catches up with them, and there's kind of a sniper duel with lots of shots of Crosshair and the assassin looking at each other in their, I don't know, thermo vision kind of heads up display. And Crosshair basically says, "I'm staying behind to deal with this. You have to go on." I think before that, Hauser and Crosshair finally get like a little heart to heart where they, you know, Crosshair basically explains like, "I believed in something and then I was wrong," and Hauser's like, "That's a pretty good explanation why you were on the bad side and why you're not now." And it's like, "Oh yeah, that's all of us." And we just, you know, we weren't in sync, and that's okay. Crosshair and the assassin, I really wish this assassin had a name, end up fighting in a waterfall, the assassin goes over the waterfall, which is television code for he's not dead.
Yeah. As we see later, you know?
In television.
But we didn't even need that.
Right. Yeah. In television, yes. Like going over a waterfall is like
waterfall.
You didn't see a body.
Yeah, no. You're
you don't need to explain
fine.
To me. I get it. I've seen television before.
Yes.
What?
It was a good line. I don't know. I was trying to think of a way to come back. I had nothing because it was funny. So
yeah.
I actually was surprised by the body at the end. I was not expecting to be alive.
Did say, "Oh, come on!"
Yeah,
it was a super steep waterfall, right?
Yeah, so it was.
Water really kill anybody?
Yes, yes,
yes, Dan.
Okay,
all the
so
time.
So, have you ever seen the movie? Okay, what's the movie about?
The Fugitive.
No.
I think you're thinking of Deep Blue Sea.
Air diving.
Air Bud?
No. With Keanu Reeves.
Point Break? I know what you're talking about. Point Break.
Okay. So I saw Point Break when I was probably like, six or seven or so.
That is too young to see Point Break.
This is the Kat Bennish story, is movies she was too young to see but saw anyways.
Babysitters were very expensive.
How did this happen? Who was involved?
Her parents.
My parents. Obviously my parents.
Well, I'm sorry. Who was not involved that should have been?
A babysitter.
It's fine. Yeah, babysitters cost money, right? You're not going to do that. Anyways, so I remember
seeing
that movie.
I guess if you're not worried about your child being like really messed up later in life.
I'm fine, right?
Yes, sure.
Yeah. Mildly, what do we have to say to move on?
So
are you, is this why you're always fixated on robbing banks and or infiltrating gangs as an FBI member?
Mostly arson. No, but the important fact here that I am actually trying to make here is I remember watching that movie and my dad explaining to me essentially like the, and some might correct me here, but essentially, because there's a guy who jumps out of a plane and he survives when he hits the ground because it's soft. I might be getting this movie right, but I'm pretty sure it's like a soft mud.
I think they had parachutes.
No, I've watched this movie fairly recently.
At one point they jump and they don't. He survives when he lands. And
without a parachute?
He does jump without a parachute at one point.
I'm pretty sure this is Point Break. Anyways.
I think you're thinking of Captain America.
No. This movie came in the 90s.
Is your dad D.B. Cooper?
Anyways.
Without thinking.
The story I'm trying to tell is like water at a very high speed is actually harder than land.
That is true.
And that was the conversation that I had with my dad after watching this movie. And I thought about this when he came out of the waterfall. It's like, although, to be fair, the waterfall, it actually would have broken the surface tension. because of the waterfall. So, you know, it's possible. It is technically possible, maybe. I don't know.
Also, it's
I'm not a scientist.
TV show, so it's fine.
Dan, can you watch all Point Break and
help I did. Us? I, in fact, watched this for not playing, not probably within the last 2 or 3 years. It was in this house. So
I've seen this movie several times.
Yeah. There is a scene where they jump.
Yes.
And Keanu Reeves doesn't have a parachute, so he jumps out and intercepts him. It does not explain. Does he not, like, grab him? I haven't watched it. I don't remember it well enough.
Anyways, that, again, I distinctly remember having that conversation with my dad after this movie.
Okay.
Okay.
So I thought it was
and
very
relevant. And your dad was like,
moment.
You'll be fine if you get out of an airplane. So basically, he was like, you're watching a movie that's inappropriate for your age. Let me reinforce some of the negative lessons in
so
it.
So I don't see why you're so bent out of shape by the whole Boeing door thing. Those people would be fine.
You know what's bent out of shape? The Boeing door.
Anyways.
Star Wars. So they get
you're
to their
a flight tomorrow, right?
Nope. They get to an extraction point on like a plateau, but Wolf shows up and conveniently parks kind of like a ways away from shines a spotlight at them. And Wolf is there with like a lot of guys. And again, it's like his mix of he's got clone trooper. He's got at least one clone trooper kind of special.
Are there some other stormtroopers still there?
I think there's some other stormtroopers. Okay. There was a lot of people shooting each other in the woods.
Yeah.
And they make a big deal, I think, that Wolf's group is using stun.
I thought about
the Bad Batch. I don't think so. The Wrecker does do a lot of just like knocking guys into each
Crosshair
other. Probably those guys
the
are
pilot
fine.
Of that other ship.
He does.
And it explodes.
Dan, that pilot was a bad man. We don't have time to get into his backstory, but like he was embezzling from the clone army.
Because there's a couple points where like Rex grabs people and uses their guns, which are set on stun. But they're extremely inconsistent about it.
If you kill a clone in the dark, that's like a victimless crime.
Whoa. I will say again, it's really impressive to me that how much Wolf is clearly respected as the leader of this. There are no snide comments, even like, why aren't we? Like, everyone kind of accepts what Wolf says. Which is, I think
it's a little weird. I think I would have found it a little less weird if there weren't so many people with Wolf, right? I mean, Hunter does give a pretty good speech where it's like, so you're tracking down children and you aren't going to question that at all? Like, I know that, like, we've been trained. Like, he gives a really good speech, right? Like, we've been trained not to question stuff. But I'm just going to ask you right now.
I think it's Rex.
We are protecting a child. Oh, you're right.
Yeah,
sorry. We're protecting a child, and you are hunting down a child. Maybe are you the bad guys?
Also, if you're wondering about how Rex survived that cruiser or attacker crashing, please see season 6 of Clone Wars. Clone Wars. Quite possibly the best episode of television. One of the best hours of television.
It's very good. It almost makes you want to watch episode 3 right after.
That is a mistake. That is dangerous.
Don't fall for that.
Yeah. I do like that the official line on Rex is he's dead and went down in a cruiser. Yeah. Although nobody explains why that cruiser, which was just in hyperspace at the time, exploded. And everybody died and it crashed into a planet. Don't think about it too hard, says the Empire. I like the idea there are conspiracy theories out there. People are like, hyperdrive fuel doesn't burn hot enough.
All the Jedi died at the same time, so I feel like there's a lot of cover.
But again, I would like to point out, there is one of the stormtroopers named Namek, and I realize that's probably just like a very common name now in Star Wars. But again, Namek's manifesto, right? Like, he's the one with the red string out there.
Yep.
That's true.
And so Wolf basically says, I guess you can go. I feel like that may have repercussions because it seems like he counteracted orders with a lot of witnesses, right? It wasn't like Wolf and Rex were like in the woods pointing guns at each other and nobody else was around. It was like a big standoff. But Echo shows up. He's got Gregor with him and they all fly away. And Rex tells Hunter, look, you really need a motivation for the rest of this season. And that should be that as long as, as long as Omega is, the Empire is interested in her, she will never be safe. You got to figure out what that would be. So, M count was mentioned once, and Rex was like, that sounds like a thing I've heard
about
before.
This is the question, like, do people not know the word midichlorian? Of like,
I wondered about that, and I like to think that maybe a lot of people in the Star Wars universe, yeah, it's a state secret. A lot of people in the Star Wars universe have seen episode one and don't like to talk about it. So, but this maybe it's the thing. Just like, remember also, apparently most people have never seen a Jedi.
Yeah.
And think that they're made up, you know.
But I will say, I was expecting a couple of filler episodes before we got back into the main plot here. I was impressed that I just went right back into it. And like, this really is going to be the full plot, I think, for the whole season.
I hope so. I was excited. I was
pulled in Rex right away, right? I had been missing Rex. Glad they pulled him into the storyline. And glad Gregor's here too. It seems like we might then have, I'm hoping that we'll, I think we've talked about how this season's going to end or sort of transform into like, where did all the clones go? And it's also hopefully how, is going to be how we see Gregor, Rex, and Wolf all up on that random planet and Rebels.
Yeah. I don't know if we'll get all the way there, but I think we'll see.
I will not be happy unless they get there.
Unless there's a flash forward at the last episode.
You know, I would just temper your expectations is all I'm saying.
You want to look at them looking through like one ads and like, oh, we can get this.
Desert planet with giant sandworms. Yes.
Yeah. And Wolf is like, well, we're going to need some kind of walker, but I found a really great deal on this one.
But I do think, the interesting part of it, when I realized it was Wolf, who was trying to track them down, that was the moment where I was like, oh, I know how this is gonna end. Is like, Rex is gonna talk to him and be like, hey, you know, like, because they are old friends, and you know, we're like,
and this is interesting because this is showing us like the number of good guys on the side of the Empire is getting kind of thin, at least from good guys that we spend any time with. But Wolf seems to be still like a good guy who is on the wrong side, but is oblivious to that. Right?
It's good to show that they're still like, it's good to show that Crosshair wasn't the last one, that there's still a lot of people who are on doing all that brainwashing. So it's actually kind of a really nice choice.
Think it also, I don't remember, I feel like they made a tacit comment at some point that essentially the conditioning doesn't last forever. Like the Order 66 thing, it's not like a permanent sort of thing because they're not.
I feel like it kind of can't be, right? Because they're not walking around like
good soldiers, zombies. Orders. Yeah, like,
yeah, they're not. I mean, they wouldn't be useful if they were kind of robots, right? Like they need to be autonomous soldiers, right?
And there aren't any Jedi left, so there's no trigger. Well, I mean, they aren't encountering Jedi, so there's no trigger for it, essentially.
Yeah.
And I think it's just pointing out that like, there's maybe that programming was extremely limited and does not appeal to, like, does not affect their ability to like question orders, like to a certain extent, or maybe it's worn off a bit after a year or two.
I mean, some of the conditioning we do for people today without science fiction tools are to follow orders and shoot without thinking and things like that don't involve brain, you know, chips inside your brain. I was glad that they jumped into it. I even felt like it kind of, you know, I think back when we had the stuff with Hauser, I was like, why are we spending time with this character? And they even kind of repaired some of that for me, because it's like, oh, this character will matter later. Whereas at the time, it felt like kind of a distraction.
Yeah.
I mean, this is basically the halfway point of the series, right? We're at episode 7 out of 15. You know, I don't know if there will be any filler in the last, what do we have, 8 left?
Filler. I think we talked about in the last episode of this podcast of essentially they need to take Hemlock off the board so that Omega is safe, right?
Yeah.
That has to be the end game. And then there's the question of what happens to all the clones and Omega.
I think also possibly, certainly rescuing the clones from Tantiss.
Yeah,
maybe
destroying
Tantiss entirely.
That's what I say. When I say take off the board, I don't mean like push him over a waterfall. I mean like fun.
Getting this done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See the body. I agree. I think I like that this is, it's a big hook. It's a good hook to have Omega be like, I thought it was an interesting point that they're like, they were already looking for you, but they were looking for him because they wanted to, you know, motivate Nala Se. Whereas now it's like, oh, now we've moved to the next level, which is this is literally the most important person that they need.
It was interesting though, they were not just, oh, this is the plot thing, so we're going to move forward and ask questions. They're like, well, it could also mean that they're just looking for her because they're looking for her. but it's weird then they're not looking for Crosshair. It could also mean that Crosshair is essentially a double agent. And it was really good. Even though we know that's not the issue, it was very good to see a clone actually ask that question, because that would be a logical conclusion as well.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Not just the foregone conclusion because I have to keep the plot going forward. I thought that was actually a really good bit of script writing right there.
I think it's nice that after multiple series of this show, it feels like we are now building toward a big Star Wars-y culmination, right? Whereas so much of the previous series had just been like, we're getting by, we're taking odd jobs, this is our life. And, you know, it seems like we now need to go deal. We have a big bad villain, he's got an evil base with horrible stuff going on, and we've got to deal with that. And also, it's secret stuff, so you never hear about it, right?
Right.
Obviously, they don't start the rebellion, because the rebellion doesn't get to start until much later. That's always the kind of challenge of working within the Star Wars world, is like, you know, how do you tell a medium-sized story, right?
I appreciate that the threads of rebellion are there and they've spooled it out, because it's not only realistic that, like, well, the dissent and the upset, like, stuff would always be there. It would be an undercurrent. Yeah. It's just a question of how well organized are they.
And there could have been, I think will be super interesting, too, to see if, like, multiple rebellions that failed, right, too. You need to see people rise to fall, because that's what keeps the threat real.
And like, neither of those senators show up a lot later on, as far as we can tell.
No.
Yeah, so there may be some more casualties before they get better.
And it does, I mean, you know, I don't know. I keep thinking about, like, who of our beloved characters aren't going to make it. I mean, I think there could be a couple of them are all on Space Grease on Pabu and just living out their lives, and we just never go back to Pabu, and that's okay. But it kind of feels like,
I think there's a chance
something's going to happen where a lot of clones are not around anymore.
There's a chance. If I were to take one off the board, it'd be Crosshair.
Crosshair.
I think that's
making
the one,
a noble
the story
sacrifice.
Of like the full redemption
full
arc.
Full redemption, yeah.
You wouldn't take Hunter or... you could potentially Hunter, but it's not Wrecker. It's not Wrecker, and it's not Echo.
I was thinking Wrecker. But
you think Wrecker?
Yeah, a little bit. And Echo I have questions about, too, because Echo and Rex are close. And, like, Echo...
Why isn't Echo on the desert planet, you know?
Again, maybe he retired. I don't know.
I just after
he's on a moisture farm upstate.
I just want them all. Everyone knows this. I just want them to go to Space Grease, except for Gregor. Yeah.
The desert planet is bad for his skin, so he's somewhere. He's on Dagobah. You know, he needs somewhere moist.
Well, we've got eight episodes left, starting with next week's episode, Bad Territory. So we'll see where that goes.
Well, do we get any listener mail, or now that we don't talk about Moonlight anymore, we're finally
we've
free
got
of
some
that.
Listener mail.
All right, let's do it.
Listener mail.
All right, we'll start off with Dave writes in, finally getting around to catching up with ACP. Thoughts on the Bad Batch season 3, loving it and the series as well. Thanks Dave. This is on Mastodon, by the way, where you can reach us at acp@zeppelin.flights. Rob writes, basically, at least anyone who was, say, at least 8 years old in the early 80s must remember Moonlighting. I simply refuse to any who say they don't.
Thanks, Rob. Keep it alive.
Trevor, returning.
Hey, Trevor.
Says, hi, all. Okay, love the last episode. I think that if Dan doesn't have a catchphrase by the next week's recording, that Kat and Tony should get to pick a new one out for him.
Seems fair. Right,
yeah,
Kat?
Absolutely. Those are the rules.
Trevor continues. He has subjected us to a... trivia question.
Okay.
On to more important matters. Two of the following factoids are a lie, but one of them is true. Which one?
I've already lost.
A.
Wait, how many true? One. I.
Two.
Wait.
Two true.
Okay.
One lie.
Two truths and a lie.
Yep.
So we have to find the lie.
Sorry. No. Two lies and a truth.
I'm so confused.
Dan.
It's not my fault. Two of the following factoids are a lie, but one of them is true.
Okay.
Find the truth.
Trevor's fine. It's just your translation of this. No, keep going.
No, we respect you. We just wish you were better than you were.
Let's get through
this.
Okay. So none of them are true.
Yeah.
In Moonlighting.
One of them is true. Oh, God. They're about Moonlighting and not about Star Wars? Oh, man. Our brand has just lost it. So, you know.
In Moonlighting, the iconic Blue Moon Detective Agency office was modeled after the office of a famous 19th century detective in London.
Cool.
B.
That might be a lie, Kat.
I know. It's still cool, though.
Moonlighting used a diffusion.
Lots of lies are cool.
B. Moonlighting used a diffusion filter for scenes with Cybill Shepherd to recreate the look of 1940s films. Or C. The show's title, Moonlighting, was inspired by a Sinatra song Bruce Willis sang during his audition.
I'll point out, I have not actually seen Moonlighting.
Yep, that's fine.
Cat. And yeah, Dan probably already knows the answer from reading the email.
Correct.
So we
I read this on Mastodon too, so I actually already know the answer. So really, it's up to you, Tony.
I don't remember. Bruce Willis does sing because he sings in
Hudson Hawk.
Yeah. Hudson Hawk.
He has a whole album, I believe, doesn't he?
Yeah, okay. And Shatner, they do a duet.
I'm true. A little suspicious of the diffusion filter. I'm used to that. Like, they use that all the time on old Star Trek. I feel like that would have been a weird thing to see in the 80s. And then Moonlighting is based on that factoid was very vague in that it was just a London detective agency. I guess I'll go with the diffusion filter.
That is correct. And it's very obvious if you watch it. She's got very, it's almost like the Vaseline on the lens thing where it's like, it's very soft and bloomy whenever she's on screen, or not all the time, but like a lot of her.
So the other two things were lies.
Correct.
Interesting. Okay.
I actually read that wrong. I think I was saying that that was the lie and the other ones were correct.
Tony, you're a natural.
So literally I got it opposite row wrong. All right. Sounds great.
Lyle writes in, I believe I have found your Star Wars Moonlighting connection.
Okay.
Check out episode 17 from season 2, Funeral for a Doornail. I'm assured by IMDb that it has a lightsaber duel, as all hard-boiled detective stories should.
Okay. That's the episode we'll watch.
I guess that will be one of the episodes we watch when we are required to watch Moonlighting.
Dave returns to say, so I could listen to Dan, Tony, and Kat talk about TV, movies, popular culture from, say, the 1980s onwards. Perhaps that's their next gig. Also, I do remember Moonlighting with Cybill Shepherd and Bruce Willis, although didn't watch much of it on telly about the same time as L.A. Law, if I recall. Also, there is a Star Wars crossover. Didn't Obi-Wan mention Moonlighting in episode 4? And then he had a YouTube clip of Obi-Wan saying, that's no moon in the space.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay. Well done.
Anne writes, I think on this show, Dan's catchphrase is a frustrated sigh as Tony and Kat go off on a crazy tangent.
Sounds right.
Never stop doing that, as I love the chaos. Thanks for the insightful discussion each week. Also, 38, never heard of Moonlighting until you mentioned it. From the UK, maybe that skews it.
Thanks, Anne.
And then our, as every good thing, there's always a dissenting opinion.
Which is fair. We
Jeff writes, I thought this was a Star Wars show. Why are we talking about Moonlighting and other non-Star Wars properties? The last episode could have been 10 minutes shorter. Hashtag stay on target.
Thanks, Jeff. That's we respect that.
Yeah.
That's, we can start putting points of like, Jeff, you should stop listening here.
Not unfair. And honestly, the idea that we only wasted 10 minutes is generous. Just, you know, every minute you spend with us is a minute you could have spent bettering your lives.
We also got a few emails to acp@theincomparable.com. Michael writes in, hello, Star Wars pals. First of all, the amount of Michaels writing in was very funny to me because my name is also Michael. What can I say? It's a fantastic name.
It's a very common name.
In keeping with the previous thread, I've never heard of Moonlighting. I was born in the early 2000s, and thus I'm in my early 20s, proving that you do have younger listeners.
Yes! Wow. Thanks, Michael. Like...
How's it like, Michael, your joints don't hurt in the morning, Michael?
Yeah, what's it like do you have anything on you that like makes like a snapping, clacking noise when you know, like walk across a room? What's that even like? I can't imagine.
Are there days where you wake up and you are, you know, refreshed?
Yeah.
Not tired? Not worn down by existence? I am an avid listener of The Incomparable, especially this podcast and Total Party Kill. You guys are very entertaining and do a great job. Thank you, Michael. Although I'll chalk that up to the inexperience of youth.
Total Party Kill. That doesn't sound like a good podcast.
No, I don't think so.
I don't care for that.
Yeah. I've been told to say that Strahd should stop running away.
Sorry.
Cross promotion. I am loving the season of The Bad Batch so far and totally agree they have found confidence in their storytelling ability. Yeah. My question for you guys is, where do you think this season will take us? Where do you see the characters going at the end of the series in their individual arcs? Mm. I personally think they might pull a Rogue One. Anyway, thanks for the great show as always. Sincerely, Michael. We touched on this a little bit, but I think it is an interesting question.
I thought about a clean sweep of everyone.
Well, Omega's not going to die. That would be
that would just be
why did I watch this show?
Yeah, you can't kill a child.
We tried really hard to save this girl for 3 seasons. She died at the end. Our lives are pointless. At least in Rogue One, they saved the galaxy, even if they died.
So I see your point. I'm just saying it's a possibility.
It is. I mean, all things are possible, but that seems unlikely.
Yeah, I agree.
I feel like a lot of other people may die, and Omega may realize that she needs to go live in hiding to not endanger the people around her.
I got a hot take.
I feel like it with Ray. Like, she can't be by herself. Yeah. Like, she has to be with, like, one member of her family, which is either Hunter.
That would be, it will be sad if at the end it's like, here I am on a different desert planet, living in a little domed hut, farming moisture by myself. That would not be a, just me, that would be a sad,
just
sad
me
ending.
And Gonky.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
I
don't know. Clone Wars is a show that, which, and this is, you know, effectively a continuation of Clone Wars. They're willing to, you know, remind us of, like, the horrors of war, and that, like, these clones don't, not very many of them get to live nice, relaxing retirement.
And a walker on a sand planet.
Yeah. I'm still thinking, my point of view is wishful thinking, this is what I want. I'm not the writer, is I want all four of them to live. So Wrecker, Crosshair,
Hunter,
Omega, all in Space Grease, all
Echo doesn't get to come.
And Echo, yes, them all.
He visits. He's got, like, a paper route.
Yeah.
He lives next door, Dan. The four of them are in a wacky house, but he's the neighbor on the other side of the fence.
I think it's basically going to have to be, like, we have to keep a low profile to make sure no one ever finds Omega. And that, like, gives them the argument of, like, well, that's why you never see us again. Pulling under the Obi-Wan there.
So, yeah. Here's my hot take. I was thinking about this as well. Is I feel like we have invested a lot of time in Omega as a character. It is still very early after Episode 3.
Yeah,
we don't know what the future of Star Wars animation is, but I feel pretty confident they're not going to let it lie there. Like, having done Clone Wars and Bad Batch and Rebels, all have this, like, kind of glue between them. Sure feels like there's about 20 years in there that we can, like, at least 15 to 20 years that we can experiment with. So I wonder, I was thinking about the fact that we saw Emery in episodes, who is the grown-up version of Omega. The actress who plays her, Keisha Castle-Hughes, is a fairly well-known New Zealand actress. Wondered to me, like, could we see an Omega spinoff that's set 10 years later or something and involves that character and what they're up to?
But without the Bad Batch, there's no draw.
I'm not saying there wouldn't be any characters of those, like, those characters wouldn't make the leap. But I was like, why invest this much time in this character only to have her basically be like, well, she's the ball, right? She's like the thing, where the MacGuffin, the thing we're protecting.
So
where does her agency come in? Where does her adventures come in? I kind of wanted a chance for her to grow.
Well, I like the idea of what is the next show, because, you know, that does kind of, I mean, Dave Filoni has all of his animated things and now his live action extended things. And so you don't have to necessarily end things, right? You can even do a thing where, like, you know, Grogu and the Mandalorian are sitting at their house that they've inherited and things look great, but no, they'll be in a movie. Don't worry about them. The story never ends. I mean, if we think about what is a future Omega show look like, I mean, it sure seems like M-Count might be a thing. What does life for an up-and-coming, Force-sensitive future Jedi look like in the era between Episode 3 and 4?
May I make a modest proposal?
Sure.
If it's about her running a detective agency.
On Andor?
No, I was thinking to myself, man, you know who'd be a great person to shepherd a Force-sensitive clone through some
Ahsoka?
Life?
Ahsoka.
A character that is still, again, unaccounted for about 15 years here. Yeah. I want to put money down.
Complicated relationship with the Force.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
but I want to put some money down on her showing up maybe before the end of this season.
Maybe, because we still have the whole Ventress plot line.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, okay. I was about to say, we have no Jedi currently in this plot at all, other than essentially Kanan at the very beginning of the first episode of Bad Batch.
Yep, correct.
So I was like, it would be weird to throw in. However, to recant my statement, the fact that we're pulling in Ventress makes
it... that is wild that is, like, on the shelf as a thing that we know we're going to do in 8 episodes, and I assume that you don't just drop her in for 10 minutes in the middle of an episode.
I also,
like, I assume,
as I think I mentioned elsewhere, I happen to look at some of the Disney promotional stuff while I was grabbing images, and I do know there are some other characters who will appear before the, like, characters we know who will appear, I think, before the end of the season. So,
there is a chance then, if you're pulling in Avengers, then I think you can pull in Ahsoka. I would be so. The death of Tech was so brutal.
Yeah.
And I'm so attached to all these characters.
You're not looking forward to experiencing that 3 more times.
Because I think at this point, like, their deaths, if they kill them off, I feel like at this point it's not actually doing anything other than just to create emotional, like...
Mm-hmm. We've already hit that beat, is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly, right? Like, it doesn't... It's not anything new, and it will just make us feel bad. It just makes us feel bad without doing anything to the plot, right?
Well, I guess how it happens, I think. I guess,
yeah. Listen to me in 4 episodes, be like, guys, I know it. Like, Wrecker's death was so important. Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, my
Hunter's time
Hunter
has come.
Has we've to had die. Enough of yes.
Him. Yeah. I mean, what's tricky is Omega is still a child.
Yes. Right.
So it's not like, and we're assuming there's not going to be some kind of big time jump in the next game. Because it sure doesn't feel like, in, you know, in 8 episodes, it's like, well, you're 11 now. It's time for you to go off on your own in this very dangerous galaxy where assassins want to kill you.
Yeah. Good luck,
and we're
going to
be,
and we're going to do
our own thing. We're going to start running spice or something. You don't want to get mixed
Detective
up.
Detective agency.
The spice must run. Okay. Next question.
Eldon writes in, hello, Dan, Kat, and Tony. In the midst of your review of the discussion about moonlighting, Tony mentioned, perhaps disappointedly, that the illusion of the audience being, quote, hip 20-somethings was now shattered. I can confirm what Kat and Tony said. I have no spending power and am indeed scraping by, though only working 2 jobs, not 3. At least you know you have one listener born in a year that doesn't start with a 1. Ooh, scary. Wow. The inevitable march of time.
Snap. This might be a vampire that was born in year 0 or something.
Good call. Yeah. 900, yeah. Yeah. I always enjoy hearing your thoughts and predictions on the series and look forward to your future coverage. As some asides, I think I had heard the term moonlighting, but to me that meant working an additional job on the night shift as a side gig or self-employed practice. I had no idea about the show or its connection to that writing problem, though that phenomenon totally makes sense. Yes, that, I mean, the expression well predates the show. I think that's kind of the riff on the show. Mm. Yes. And I have no idea what Remington's deal is. That's probably for the best.
Yeah. Scientists are still figuring out what Remington's deal means.
It's really hardest to substance us known to man. Yeah. Unrelatedly.
It's the top of the Mohs scale.
I think that's supposed to be unrelatedly. Sorry, Eldon. You also wondered how the younger generation feels about the prequels.
Ooh.
I think Kat nailed it with, quote, great idea, poor execution, unquote. I think maybe that was the previous episode. And the sequels are the opposite. I don't despise them because the memes are fantastic and the Clone Wars really help. I agree it's probably unwise to watch the movies in isolation because the dialogue is just so bad, but there exists on the internet a 4-hour supercut of Revenge of the Sith called, I think, the Ultimate Edition. The cuts in scenes from the early 2000s 2D animated Clone Wars, as well as from the season 7 of the show, and that is perhaps my favorite movie. It's so good. Goodbye, nerds, and happy listening from Utah.
Okay.
I don't know. Do we have to watch that now?
That sounds interesting.
I mean, but yeah,
how do you get the 2D
attention.
Clone Wars in there? That's not even canon.
Yeah.
But if
it
tells the story better, it's also, Darling, it's a 4-hour cut. Like, that itself is not canon, yeah. Right? Who cares?
Yeah. I'm just saying, there's, like, at least cutting in stuff from season 7 of Clone Wars is like that. Okay, there's, like, scenes in there that could kind of interplay with the movie. But the, like, I just, my memory of the 2D Clone Wars, Tony.
I didn't even know those existed.
It's great. It's the
Tarkovsky,
right?
It's Gendy Tartakovsky.
Yeah, and it's
not
like,
saying his last name correctly.
Yeah, I can't pronounce it either.
He is an amazing animator who's
done cool.
some other amazing stuff.
It's real
stuff.
Cool, but okay. It bears no resemblance to anything that happens.
Yeah, but if it's good, it tells
the
story better.
Kat, if you've never seen it, we should
yeah,
watch it
great.
At some point.
Yeah, because the whole thing is only about, there's what, 20 episodes and they're like 5 minutes?
Yeah, I think it's about 2 hours total, maybe, or maybe it's an hour and a half or something like that, if you watch all of them. And they were released in ridiculous tiny little chunks.
Oh, like 5-minute episodes,
I don't remember if it has no dialogue or very,
it's
very,
very little.
Dialogue.
I think there is a
dialogue.
Little bit, but...
Okay,
yeah.
Let's check it out.
It has a lot of battle scenes, but there's some stuff in it, so that's cool.
Yeah, it's got a cool art style, too. I was trying to pull up.
I think it was mainly notable for... I think it was the first place we saw General Grievous before.
Yes,
because I think General Grievous appears in that before he then appears in the movie. And there's, in fact, the kind of specific... Are you sure it's not canon anymore, Dan?
I thought it had been decanonized, but I could be wrong.
I don't know. There's the specifically the kind of weird thing where... In the show, a tangent about an animation that may no longer be canon or not. General Grievous
the mics
fights.
Are canon, it turned out, so you know maybe this is canon too.
General Grievous fights Mace Windu and gets badly hurt, and that's why General Grievous when we see him in the movies is like wheezing and all raspy, is because he's been hurt by Mace Windu in a previous fight that only people who watch that cartoon saw. So yes,
yeah, it turns out searching on Wikipedia for Clone Wars. Clone Wars is really, really confusing. I'm going to say we
table
it's on,
this one.
The series is on Disney. It's weirdly under, this is a thing where it makes you feel old. I think it's under their like retro animation thing. And it's like, it's from 2003, which is apparently, you know, that's if retro. You do the math several decades ago.
I don't want to do the math. Yeah. All right. Finally, Seb writes in. I hadn't read this email yet. I'm reading it live because it was subtitled Dan's catchphrase, and it was after we hadn't watched the episodes yet. So just in case I had spoilers. Hi, folks. Given it's become the show owner opener, I feel like Dan's catchphrase is podcasting is a complicated profession, which Dan has said at least 59 times throughout the show's 75 episodes.
Dan, you talk about clocks a lot on other podcasts.
Seb does do analytics for a lot of the incomparable shows and has dug up a lot of good things. I think there are several times where I say bounty hunting is popular. It was a complicated profession, and then I just turned it to podcasting at some point, and then I was inconsistent. So thanks.
Well, I think it's when the show was no longer
about
Mandalorian. Yeah, right? Yeah. That was the issue.
After doing some analysis on transcripts of ACP, there are a few things Dan has said more often, though. Discarding the top three of yeah, yes, and right as no good as catchphrases, the phrase Dan says the most appears to be I don't know. Which is uttered more than once an episode on average, about 117 times so far. If that's
Dan,
no good.
Can you say that a couple more times in just like a weary voice to really pad your numbers here?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
If that's no good, also up there is may the force be with you 51 times, but I feel that may already be taken. Thanks for all the great Star Wars discussion. Thank you for the numbers,
great
Seb.
Analytics.
I appreciate that. Boy, excellent. I wish I'm going to have to start saying something more interesting repeatedly.
I know. I think there's great. I have great respect for someone who admits what they don't know, because I clearly don't do that. So.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, if you'd like to write in a letter, you can reach us at acp@theincomparable.com. You can send us a message on Mastodon at acp@zeppelin.flights. We appreciate it. And of course, we are, at least a few of us are active in the Incomparable member Discord. If you're not a member, you should become a member. We help support the show and the network. We really appreciate it. There are no ads in this show. We do it for fun, but like, it's nice to have members who like to chip in and support us. We really do like it. So you can go to theincomparable.com/members and check out the member plans there and all the different perks you get with those. They're great. It's well worth it.
We could start making up ad reads too.
We do that actually on one of our other shows.
Really? And,
this episode brought to you by Beskar.
Yeah. Guy English on Biff has, for a while, used to do fake ad reads. And then he's like, we pointed out this past week that we record an episode. It's like, the podcasting ad market is so bad, we can't even get fake sponsors.
We can't afford it. Yeah.
Anyway, we will be back next week to talk about the newest episode of The Bad Batch. But I would, of course, like to thank my co-hosts. Kat Banish, thanks for being here.
Always a blast. Thank you so much.
Tony Sindelar, always a pleasure.
My pleasure as well. Goodbye, nerds.
And thank you out there for listening. We'll see you next time. But until then, may the Force be with you.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members.